Shusser Shachter, Rabbi Rebbeim from the Kollel. This Shabbos is Tu B'Shvat, and Tu B'Shvat is called by the Mishnah somewhat of a Rosh Hashanah. The Mishnah tells us that there are actually four Rosh Hashanahs. Right? The Mishnah, the beginning of a Rosh Hashanah, tells us that there are four Rosh Hashanahs, which is a very strange thing, because the term Rosh Hashanah is a very loaded term. Rosh Hashanah seems to have some greater meaning. And yet, the Mishnah tells us, the beginning of Rosh Hashanah, that there are actually four different Rosh Hashanahs. I'd like to speak for a few minutes about what these Rosh Hashanahs can mean. What is the idea that you have four different Rosh Hashanahs, Arba'a Rosh Hashanim Heim? And a little bit then to perhaps a little bit better understand, to understand Tu B'Shvat. Some of these are my own ideas, some of these I'll share with you where I heard them. So the Mishnah tells us as follows. Arba'a Rosh Hashanim Heim. There's four different Rosh Hashanahs. The first is Be'echad B'Nisan, Rosh Hashanah L'Malachim V'L'Ragalim. So, at the first of Nisan is Rosh Hashanah for certain halachas. It's very strange. How can a year have a Rosh? A year is a circle. It's very funny. It's very arbitrary. Where are you going to pick as the beginning of the year? It doesn't really have a Rosh. A Rosh is usually something that stands on top. You're standing up, so this has a Rosh. But the year is a circle. So if you think about it, the whole concept of a Rosh Hashanah is a very strange thing. You have to pick some point. For certain halachas, for certain things, you need to have a year. You need to know when to start and when to end. You need to know when to date a shtar. You need to know what's a tax year. You got to pick some date, and that date becomes the beginning of the year, and you go around the circle, and then the date before it becomes the end. It's very interesting where we get these dates from. So the Mishnah tells us that the first of Nisan is Rosh Hashanah for Malachim and Regalim. Malachim and Regalim for Jewish kings. If you're going to date a shtar, and we want to know what year of the Jewish king it is, so we don't necessarily go 354 days from the time that he started. When it comes to first of Nisan, so we say, oh, now it's the second year, now it's the third year. Okay. V'la regalim, in how we, at least according to one opinion, how we count the regalim, how we count the Yom Tov. We start first with Pesach, and then we continue with Shavuos, and then we continue with Sukkos. Okay. Be'echad be'elul Rosh Hashanah l'maiser behema. What is the tax year for Meiser on Behema? For picking a tenth of Behema? So there's a machlokes, if that's the first of Elul to the end of Av, or that's the first of Tishrei. Okay. Be'echad be'tishrei Rosh Hashanah l'ashonim v'lashmitim v'layovlos l'anatiyah v'layirakos. The first of Tishrei, that's the day we know to be Rosh Hashanah. And many understand, what does it mean? Lashonim means Ladin. Ladin, it's Rosh Hashanah. But it's also for Shemitah. It's also for Yovel. It's for Natia, for when we count the Meiser for young trees, La Yerakos, when we count Meiser for vegetables. And then finally, Be'echad B'Shvat Rosh Hashanah Le'ilon. On the first of Shvat is Rosh Hashanah for trees. And of course, Hillel says, when is the Rosh Hashanah for trees, for Ilanot, Tu B'Shvat. Four different dates. The first of Nisan, the first of Elul, perhaps, the first of Tishrei, and then something in Shvat. And each of them have different dinim. It's very interesting. For different things, we start the year at different times. Not so crazy. The tax year. The tax year, we know, for certain things, you count the tax year from January 1st to December 31st. And for certain things, you start on July 1st, and you go around to the end of June. Which of these dates, though, make the most sense? If I had to ask you, which, if you had to pick a day, whatever day you're going to pick, it's going to be random. Because the year's a circle. So there really is no beginning and end. If you had to pick two of these dates, the first of Tishrei, the first of Elul, the first of Nisan, let's say Tu B'Shvat or Rosh Chodesh Shvat, which two dates make the most sense? In fact, forget about what I said. Which two dates? When would you start the year if you were just starting the year? What are the two times in the year that make the most sense? If you had to pick some day to say that this is when the year starts, when would that be? What? Perhaps Rosh Chodesh Nisan, which is the beginning of spring, or Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, which is basically the beginning of the fall. Okay, let's just imagine that you were making up dates. You were trying to decide when should the year start. In fact, there's a machlokas in the Gemara Rosh Hashanah when the world was created. One opinion says that the world was created when? In the spring. And one says the world was created in the fall. What's the machlokas if the world's created in the spring or created in the fall? What's the simplest way to understand such a difference? Exactly. Why would you know that, Yitzhak? Right? The famous question of whether or not what comes first, the chicken or the egg? Seriously, it's that simple. If you say that the year starts in the spring, so what you're basically saying is that you look around and you see the way the spring functions, and you say that the world starts with creation, with things that are blooming, things that are blossoming, things that are growing. If you decide that the year should start in the fall, then what are you saying basically comes first? The egg. Because especially in Eretz Yisrael, which is what matters, you have all the preparation, all the rain, all the nutrients, all the everything that goes in, and then it comes around. See, not so difficult. Those are the two times that make the most sense. You'd want to start a year either in the spring or in the fall. Which one is right? So the Mishnah says it depends what you're talking about. It's a fascinating comment of Rav Hirsch. Rav Hirsch says on HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem in Parshas Bo last week, Rav Hirsch says the following. What has its beginning on Rosh Chodesh Nisan? What are the two things? Jewish kings and Jewish holidays. He says that things that are particularly Jewish start in Nisan. What has their beginning in the fall? The non-Jewish kings count their, we count their years from the fall. We have Rosh Hashanah, where who's judged on Rosh Hashanah? Kol Ba'ei Olam. And you have all the laws that apply to the ground, right? All the many of the agricultural laws. Those things are all in the fall. But first says something fascinating. There are two times when the year starts or restarts. In the fall, he says, is the real beginning of creation, is the real beginning of the world for everybody. And the Ribono Shel Olam cares about everybody in the world. The fall is really the beginning for the whole world, for the secular world, for the world that's whole. So you have the agricultural laws that apply to the land. You have the non-Jewish kings. You have the whole world being judged. What's the spring about? HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem. Then there's a Jewish year. And the Jewish year starts when? The Jewish year starts in the spring. Things that have to do specifically with the Jewish kings. And then Rav Hirsch says something amazing. Why is it that the things that are Jewish start in the spring, and the things that pertain to the entire world start in the fall? So he explains beautifully. He says things that are chol, God cares about everybody in the world. He cares about everything in the world. Things that are chol, they start as darkness. Comes around the year, comes the spring, they grow. But as the year comes to an end, you don't know if they're really going to last. Things that are Jewish start in the spring, and they may go through winter, but they'll come back, even if they go in decline, they'll come back again the next spring. And he explains this idea further. Did you ever wonder when was a normal time to start a day? Just like you could pick a random moment and say that's the beginning of the year, you're also going to pick a random moment. Do you ever think about that? When is a normal time to start a day? There are two times. One is sunrise and sunset. But Hirsch points out that you have exactly the same idea. Sunset is the equivalent of the fall. What do we do at night? These normal people, they go to sleep, they rest up. It's the egg, right? At night, you put nutrients in so you could get up in the morning. The fall is the same thing as Shkia, as sundown. That's when everything goes into resting to get ready for the next morning. The spring is the equivalent of sunrise.
getting light. Everything's coming up. Everything's coming out. When do we generally consider that the day begins within Judaism? At night. Just like the year basically begins in the fall, and the day basically begins when the sun sets. But there's one place in the world where the Jewish day actually starts in the morning and continues through the night. Where's the only place in the world that the day actually starts in the morning and then the night follows the day, not the other way around? That's what happens in the Beis HaMikdash. When you bring a korban in the morning, the korban doesn't expire when the sun goes down. That's when you start, right? Ma'ariv is when you brought up the pieces from today's korban. You ever think how strange that is? I thought that the new day starts. You should have to get everything up on the Mizbeach before the new. No. In the Beis HaMikdash, the day starts with the morning and continues through the night around to the next morning. Just like Nisan, the spring, the day starts with light, the day starts with spring, and it moves its way around until you get to spring again. That's the fascinating idea that Rav Hirsch points out. That both the day and the year can either start with sunrise or sunset, fall or spring. Things that are particularly Jewish, they start when things are rising. That's the spring. That's the Beis HaMikdash. Things that pertain to the whole world start at one point. They start at fall. They start at sunset. They may come to sunrise at some point, but eventually you don't know what's going to happen by the end of the cycle. Very interesting. When does the secular new year and new day start? In the middle of the night, which is a very interesting thing. It's also a very meaningless thing. The secular day, as well as the secular year, also start in the same point in this circle. But instead of starting at a natural point, sunrise or sunset, fall or spring, they start and end in the middle of the night. The year starts and ends in the middle of the winter. The day starts and ends in the middle of the night. If you're a people that's very, very interested in tracking time and keeping time and allowing for new beginnings, you're not going to start new things at 12 a.m. And you're not going to start new years on January 1st. Because that's a time when nobody's awake and nobody's outside. The natural times to say, okay, let's give it a new beginning. And that's what we're about, new beginnings. Is you're either going to do that at sunrise or sunset when people are out, when people notice, when something changes. But if you think about it, it's a little absurd to mark the beginning of the new day and the beginning of the new year smack in the middle of nowhere where nobody's going to notice. Mordechai Breuer, one of my teachers, when I was learning in Eretz Yisrael, pointed this out in one of his farm. How fascinating that is, that the Jewish calendar starts either in the fall sunset, in the spring sunrise, or as opposed to the secular calendar, which starts and ends really sort of in the middle of nowhere. That's why, by the way, a day that for us is Rosh Hashanah, one of the most significant days of the entire year, doesn't have that same meaning within a secular new year. It's not really a time to begin or end anything. It's just a time to get drunk. I'm not telling you you should get drunk on the secular New Year, but I would tell you it's appropriate. Because that's why you would celebrate something in the middle of a stupor, in the middle of the night, because you're not trying to capture that moment. You're trying to wake up and realize that it passed when you get up the next morning. Let me just say one thing about Tu B'Shvat. Now, Tu B'Shvat finds itself in an interesting place. It's not exactly at sunrise, it's not exactly at sunset. But what's interesting about Tu B'Shvat is that there actually are two new years for trees and not one.
you've always grown up thinking, you've always had lots of things, and said, when is the new year for trees? Whatever, how could a tree have a new year? What does that mean? It's a din in orla, when you can eat it. That's really what Tu B'Shvat has to do with. But we always are told that the new year for trees is when? The new year for trees is around this time of year. There's a problem with that, though. What are one of the things, we went through the things that are Tishrei, right? What are one of the things that are Tishrei? Tishrei is a new year for secular kings, and for din, and for what was called Lanatia. Lanatia, for young trees. Now listen closely. It seems to be that as crazy it is to have a new year for trees, we have two new years for trees. Because when it comes to young trees, when it comes to Natia, when it comes to the laws of Maisa that seems to have to do with young trees, we mark that from the fall. And when it comes to mature trees, we seem to mark that in the spring. And why in the world would that be? So an interesting suggestion. What's the difference in halacha between a Natia, a young tree, and a mature tree? There's two interesting Mishnayos, listen closely, in the beginning of the laws of Shemitah and Shviyas. The beginning of Maseches Shviyas, they talk about this concept called Tosefes Shviyas. You know that just like you're supposed to add to Shabbos, you're also supposed to add to the Shemitah year. Starting towards the middle, the end of the sixth year, you already start adding on to Shemitah. So the first Mishnah in Shviyas says as follows. How many trees does it take to make a field of Ilanot? Chaga Ilanot. The Mishnah says it only takes three. If you have a tree over there, and a tree over there, and a tree over here, now we've got a field of Ilanot. How many young trees does it take to be significant in Halacha? Everybody know this? Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. How many Natios? How many young trees does it take to make a difference in Halacha? Eser Natios. The Halacha says that there's a difference between mature trees. You'll see where I'm going in a second. It sounds like I'm just off in nowhere. Mature trees, ilanot, we basically count maximum you need is three. Each tree sort of stands by itself. When it comes to young trees, so there you need 10. The Rosh Hashanah for young trees, listen closely, is the first of Tishrei. And you need 10 of them. The Rosh Hashanah for mature trees is in Tu B'Shvat, and you only need a couple. Why is that? In the fall, Rabbosai, on Rosh Hashanah, we come to the Ribono Shel Olam as a group of 10. We come as Natios. We come very immature. We just started, and for the good guys in Torah Shraga, Shana Aleph, you're coming, you're starting, you're new trees, right? You're just starting out. We come to the Ribono Shel Olam on Rosh Hashanah and we say basically, don't look at me myself, look at everybody, us as a group. As a group, we're gonna be Zoche B'din. That's what's going to happen, as a group. I have certain problems, you're going to make up for it. You have something you're not so good at, I'm going to make up for it. Eser Natios, a minion. In the fall, we come to the Ribono Shel Olam as a group and we say that even if I'm not worthy, as a group together, hopefully we can be Zoche B'din. And then most of us forget about tshuva. Because like, who does tshuva after Yom Kippur? Like, we're done. Maybe Hoshana Rabbah. But the tshuva process isn't done then. At some point in the year, we can't just be a group. At some point in the year, we have to stand by ourselves. In the fall, we stand as young trees. Young trees, 10 of them together. That's what counts. Tu B'Shvat, the second time we have a Rosh Hashanah for Ilanot, Tu B'Shvat, as you get to this point in the year, and especially for true the guys in Torah Shraga, as you get to this point in the year, it's not good enough just to be part of the group. You got to say to myself, how do I stand out myself? What is my particular tafkid? What is my, how am I doing? Not just how everybody's here doing. It's a fascinating mashal given in one of Rapinkus' farms. Rapinkus gives a mashal of two parents who send their kids away to yeshiva. Yeah, so your parents decide they're going to send you here off to Eretz Yisrael. So the kid goes, let's say his name is Katz, and he comes, little Maishi Katz, he comes to Torah Shraga, And his parents want to find out how he's doing, and they keep trying him. They have the wrong cell number, and they keep trying. They don't get them. There's nothing. So they don't know what's going on, so they can't reach him. They try to reach the Hanhala. Can't reach the Hanhala. Nobody answers the phone. I don't know what's going on. Nobody wants to talk. So they say, we're going to get on a plane. We're going to leave Chicago. We're going to come here to Eretz Yisrael, and we're going to find our little Maishi. So they're told that Seder starts at 9 o'clock in the morning. So they get here, 9 o'clock in the morning, they're standing outside the doors over there, and there's like three guys here, and they say, oh, this isn't so good, I don't know what's going on. They say, okay, but by 9:20, they see everybody's coming in with their espressos and their Danish and all the kind of stuff. Everybody's coming in, except for Moishi. So they're waiting, they're patient. 10 o'clock comes, the base medrash is full, the gris guys are showing up, everybody's here, good. 10 o'clock, it's Gavaldik, the whole place is hopping. But there's no Moishi. So they wait till about 10:30. And now they're really getting worried. Maybe he never made it there. Chas v'shalom, that's why he can't reach anybody. That's why he can't call. So Rabbi Elmalei comes in. And they say, excuse me, do you know the Torah Shragit guys? I go, sure I know the Torah Shragit guys. So he says, oh, where the cats is? He looks at him a little funny. Okay. Moishi cats, yeah. So they say, Sanu, how's Moishi doing? So he says, it's a great year this year in Torah Shraga. Oh, one of the best years we've ever had. And look, well, how's Moishi doing? Look at these guys learning. It's unbelievable. They're terrific this year. He said, you feeling okay? What's going on? Because how is Moishi doing? This is all you want to know about an individual student? Look at that guy up in the front. He's there, mamish, night and day. And they say, we don't want to give money to Torah Shraga. We just want to know how Maishi's doing. This is what the Ribono Shel Olam is like. And this is the way the Ribono Shel Olam, listen closely, challenges every one of us. We believe that every one of us is part of Klal Yisrael, but we're also the only child of the Ribono Shel Olam. Each and every one of us is the only child, the ben yachid, of the Ribono Shel Olam. And when the Ribono Shel Olam looks at this base medrash, he's very, very hot. He says, look at all these people here. It's at 9 o'clock, whatever. I don't know how long Penner speak. It's at 8:45, and he's still going. Everybody's sitting here. The Ribono Shel Olam says, that's not what I care about. I want to know where's Moishi. Well, how's it doing? How's the minion going in Shragit? Oh, it's great. Look at that. We got so many guys at the minion. Yeah, but my child is in bed. He slept late this morning. I don't care that there's a minion. I'm his father. He's my only son. I want to know where he is. The tremendous responsibility to be the only child of the Ribono Shel Olam. But it's also a tremendous chus. So sometimes, yeah, the Ribono Shel Olam looks at us like the way he looks at us in Tishrei. Tishrei is Esther and Teos. It's a minion. How's Klal Yisrael doing? There's never been this much Torah studied in the world. Eretz Yisrael is exploding with Torah. Yeah, okay, that's Tishrei. Tishrei is how's Klal Yisrael doing? But as the calendar begins to turn around, and we begin to turn towards the spring, and we come to Tu B'Shvat, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, how are my Ilanot? And now, how's my Ilan? I don't care how many people in the Beis Medrash. I want to know if you're in the Beis Medrash. I don't care if there's a minion. You know, some of you come from bigger Jewish communities. Some of you come from smaller Jewish communities. Always an email going out. Oh, we need people to sign up for one day in the minion. We're not going to have. Not going to have a minion. We need a tenth. The Ribono Shel Olam doesn't only care if there's a minion. I'm his only son. He wants to know if I'm at the minion. He wants to know how I'm doing. It's not a question of gaiva or anava. It's a question of realizing how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu cares about every one of us. And the fact that he looks at us and he wants to know how I'm doing on my mission and with my responsibility. It's very easy to say there's enough guys in the Beis Medrash, but Kiviyachol, the Ribono Shel Olam doesn't care. Ribono Shel Olam wants to know I'm in the Beis Medrash. That's the difference between Tishrei, Esther and Atios, a minion, and the spring. When we say it's Chag, it's Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanot, it means it's time to stand up on your own two feet. Works out well the way the calendar year works out.
because no matter where we are, we're always starting new stuff in the fall. And the fall, the job is just to get here and to be part of it and to, you know, just be mitzaref. But at some point in the year, it's February, as you get closer to the spring, you got to say, but what am I accomplishing? What's my job? What am I supposed to do? I'm supposed to speak for 2 minutes about why you. So we'll do that. I wish I could talk to you better about why you. We could also give a better shiur. But, Rabosai, it's very easy in today's world to miss how important every single one of you are. We live in a world, there used to be a time where the best way to give people mussar was to knock them down and to tell them they're nothing, they're nothing, they're nothing. And the problem is people started believing that. And if you're really nothing, then it doesn't really matter what you do. And if you're really not important, if you're one of 1,000, then it doesn't really matter if you achieve your potentials. It doesn't really matter where you go from Eretz Yisrael. But if you're the only child of the Ribono Shel Olam, then you're going to look at this much differently. The way we try to look at the Talmidim when they come in, we have Baruch Hashem 1,100 Talmidim. But we don't see 1,100 Talmidim. What we try to see is 1,100 individuals. Because every one of you is very, very important. For those of you who are 18, 19 years old, I ask you to consider the following. In about 5 years, you'll be done with college, because of course you're going to stay Shana Bet. So you have 5 years, 4 years. Is that good? I can come back? Okay. So about 4 years, 5 years, you're going to be done with college. Think about it. I know you guys think of yourself as young guys. It's fun. You're in Eretz Yisrael. By the time you're 22, 23, you'll have made many of the important decisions in your life. You will. That's a really scary thought. You'll have decided when you're 22, 23, pretty much what you want to do, where you want to live, who you married or who you're going to marry or who you want to marry, where you want to live. When do you make those decisions? You make those decisions not in Eretz Yisrael, but you generally make those decisions when you get back in Eretz Yisrael. Kutzker Rebbe pointed out that there's a difference between Matan Torah and Kabbalah Satorah. Matan Torah happened in an instant on Shavuos. The Ribono Shel Olam gave us the Torah. Until people made it part of their lives, Kabbalah HaTorah happens, he writes, in each person in their own time and in their own life. For most of you guys here in Shraga, this is Matan Torah. I'm sure you listened a lot in high school, but not really. So this is Matan Torah. This amazing amount, you have amazing Rebbeim, you're getting all this stuff, you're realizing, wow. Kabbalah HaTorah occurs when you get back to America. When you get back to Canada, wherever you're going. That's when you decide, what am I going to do with it? And the place that you find yourself when you get back is critically important. Could be one of the most important decisions that you make is, where am I going to be when I get back? What kind of environment am I going to be? Am I going to be in a place where I have people to ask to uplift me? You guys have heard of Hilchos Shabbos, the difference between the Kli Rishon and the Kli Sheni, right? Right, you're like, cook, tea, whatever. What's the difference between a Kli Rishon and a Kli Sheni? Why can you cook things in a Kli Sheni? Why doesn't a Kli Sheni cook? Kli Rishon is the pot from the fire, right? He's like, where in the world is he going with this? Kli Rishon is the pot in the fire. The walls of the pot are hot, right? Kli Sheni, the walls of the pot are cold. The cup is cold. When you have a Kli Rishon, what's in it continues to be uplifted. When you have a Kli Sheni, it's fighting against the cold walls of the Kli. A couple of weeks ago, I had this chus to give a shiur at NYU at the Hillel. So we go, we try to speak not just in NYU, we try to go. And that same night, we had a special event in NYU to commemorate the 50th yard site of one of our Rosh Yeshiva. And this was really, for me, it was an unbelievable evening. I went down to NYU, and I gave shiur to the 15 kids out of the 5,000. I'm not a terrible speaker. 15 kids out of 5,000 who decided to come to the Shia. And then I went back to the Beis Medrash in YU, and I felt the power and the energy of a Beis Medrash that was celebrating the Masoch. One was a Kli Rishon, one was a Kli Sheni. When you're making the most important decisions in your life, do you want to be in an environment where you're holding on? Or do you want to be in an environment where you're being uplifted and you have people to talk to, and you have Torah, and you have and you're in the Kli Rishon? There are many, many exciting things about college campuses. I spent a lot of time on many different college campuses. But these are the most important years of your life as individuals. It's not just enough to say the Jewish community is going to go on. Take yourselves more seriously than that. There'll be a minyan after you go to college. There'll still be minyanim and shuls. But will you be at the minyan? Are you going to be there? Are you going to be learning? Are you going to be interested in your learning? It's the most important years of your entire life. Have a happy Tu B'Shvat, everybody. It's a day to take things seriously. It's not just about singing songs and eating dried food. I don't really like dried food. I don't know what you do. This year, you don't even get out of the same tachin. What is it? It's a day to take yourself seriously. It's a day to realize how important every single one of you are. It's a day to stand, not just peer-to-peer with your great Aveirim here and your Aveirim, but to say, not how Torah Shraga doing, how am I doing? Not how the Jewish community doing, but what's going to be my role in the Jewish community for years to come.
Nightsider will begin now.